Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
Get your bobble hats ready, compact your snowballs. It's time to get cold and have a fight. It's the dog that stopped the war. Or, to give it its French title, I can't speak French, so can someone else, what's it called in French, guys?
La guerre des tuques.
It's something like the Bobble Hat War or something? Is that right?
Sort of like it's like the a toque is a kind of hat of its own. It's like when those ones you kind of like flip up on itself. They were all wearing them in the film.
But anyway, I'm Richard. Hello. The voices you've been hearing are Anthony
Good day.
and Abby.
Hello.
And just to, there's it's a complicated thing with this movie this time on the podcast because there's an English version, there's a French version, there's an animated version, and in actual fact, the live action version, which is what we're doing from 1984, that has animated, not animated, that'd be weird if it was like moving constantly, like but a picture, a cartoon cover on it. So I mean, weirdly, when me and Abby bought the DVD of this, we thought it was going to be an animation. So it's very confusing which one we're doing. But Abby, you're going to pass on the details to the listener to
I
clarify
am.
for us right now.
This is The Dog Who Stopped the War from 1984, otherwise known as La Guerre du Tuque. It was directed by André Melançon, written by Roger Canteen and Daniel Patenaud. It stars Cédric Jeunet, Marie-Pierre Ademo, Julien Ellie, Mindebeck, Maurice Cartwright, Luc Boucher,
I like how the
Max
accent just dropped.
Bourne.
Oh, it's an English-sounding accent. Fuck it, I'll just say that in a more normal way. Come on, put your little French accent on Cartwright or whatever you said.
Maurice Cartwright, Luc Boucher, Nathalie Gagnon, Olivier Monet.
Yeah, so we apologise for Abby's cod French accent and pronunciations. Unless it's spot on, then you're welcome, France.
It
Or
sounded
Cat.
good to me.
Well, they're
But
better
what
than
do
I.
I know?
So it's for us. It's the middle of a heat wave in Wales. So what better film to do than a snow-based childhood battle movie? War film? Is it a war film? War tragedy?
It's an imaginary war film, in the sense that the war is imaginary, not the film.
Well, the war is not imaginary, but it's certainly a lot milder than most wars. Well, it still has death in it, which is fucked up. But yeah, I mean, it's a cold setting, I'm saying. That's the irony of us doing it in the middle of summer. But yeah, it's like a French-Canadian film. That's weird, isn't it? You don't watch many of them very often, right, guys?
Speak for yourself.
I know I don't.
See, I watched was it Bon Cop, Bad Cop, or Good Cop, Bon Cop? No, it can't be good, can it? But I've watched a French, half Canadian film on Netflix the other day. I'm not uncultured. French Canadian stuff.
Well done. But yes, this is easily one of the more obscure films we've done.
Yeah, but that's no excuse, is it? We've all watched it. That can't be that difficult to get hold of. 50p in a.
I've read it's a classic in Canadian culture.
Well, it opens with a bunch of corny looking awards. Like, it's the only film I've seen that taunts its awards before the film begins. And there's some slightly weird looking trophies it's won. So I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, film coming out the gate bracking, are we? Okay, but yeah, I guess it was your pick, Abby, because you're the one who selected it off the shelf in the shop for 50p. So do you want to sort of justify that picking it and stuff?
The only thing I can think is that the little Canadian genes in me went, "That's one of ours," and just sort of made me pick it up.
Plus, you're a fan of dogs and war. Well, maybe not war,
Yeah.
anti-war. But the dog stops the war, so that makes sense. you like saw like what looked like an animated snowball fight dog based film. Like you were interested in the fact that you're part Canadian and the fact that you like dogs and movies and thriftiness. That was basically the motivation to take a punt on this film, right?
The cover also suggested that it was perhaps more slapstick than it actually was.
Well, it's quite a slapstick film, I think. It's kind of like live Bash Street Kids or South Park or something.
It certainly had the sound effects of a slapstick film, which was a little jarring at times.
Yeah, when it's not got 80s synthy music, it's got like comedy noises of snowballs being thrown or people being bonked on the head.
It was fine.
Yeah. But so this you watched it the first time blind, Abby. You didn't know anything about it, did you?
Nothing at all. Other than the cover. That was it.
Yeah, it gives you a sense that it's a kind of slightly caperish kids film about snow and dogs and stuff.
That's the thing. I expected many snowballs, and it did deliver.
It did, in spades. Yeah, so we both watched it for the first time on a speculative, oh, this is a weird-sounding title and a weird-looking film. And then I think what made us want to chat about it on a podcast was just because it's a fairly nice film and there's some pretty reasonable and realistic child acting, I think. I mean, it was dubbed, so it was slightly off for us. But Anthony, you watched the French version, did you not?
I did.
So we might be able to compare and contrast as we go, if it's irrelevant. Mm. But it's a pleasant little movie. And you go, oh, it's really, there. Other than a teacher and a mum or something, once in a while, it's almost completely child actors and a dog. And so it was surprising how you don't see that very often, I don't think. Usually there's some conflict between adults and children in kids' films, I think. But this is, all the conflict is between the kids themselves.
Yeah, you're right. And then by the very rules of filmmaking, this must have been the single hardest film to film ever.
Yeah, does animals and kids tend to be avoided at the best of times? Plus, you know, war films are pretty difficult to shoot, it seems. But yeah, the main thing was, you're watching it, it's perfectly pleasant, and then the ending just slaps you in the face and goes, fuck you. Fuck you. You thought this was a light-hearted allegory for war. Well, no, it just got fucking real. Too real. And it broke the cardinal sin, which I'm sure we'll get into. But obviously, spoilers, we're going to talk about the end, which is, you know, impactful in some ways. And also, you know, the title kind of spoils the film.
It does, which is a bit of a shame.
I mean, not the French one. The French one, that's fine. Like, you know, hat war, that's fine. But like, the dog that stopped the war, you're thinking, well, it doesn't matter what these kids do and who's going to win the battle of the snowball fight or, you know, whatever you want to call it. Because, you know, the dog's going to come along and stop it in some way. It doesn't say how. But when it does, you're like, Christ. Really? Really, film? Fuck you, yeah? But that I think that basically explains why we're doing it. Is because we're just, like, got to deal with some issues, I think, is the real reason. But, Anthony, you basically knew even less about this because you didn't select it from a shop. You were just told, we're doing this one. Do you reckon you're interested? So what were you thinking when you heard about this one?
Yeah, I really didn't know this one. All I could go on was like a very brief description from you guys about what it was. I didn't know. Like, I'm not familiar with Quebecois cinema from the 80s. So, like, I didn't know what to expect. Like, obviously it's not a mainstream area in filmmaking. So I was guessing something a little cheaper and maybe a bit naff, especially being like a kid's film. Like, maybe it was going to have that kind of kiddie tone where it, like, even though it seemed to be like some sort of like allegorical tale about war, you know, kids' films, they all tend to be a bit dumb and kind of talk down to you. So I think I was expecting I don't really know. If anything, I was expecting just another kind of like dumb kids film, I suppose.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say it goes into the territory of like Plague Dogs and Watership Down. It's not like constantly harrowing. It's just got oh, come on, that wasn't needed for the tone that you had for this film. You could have had a lighter ending, you know?
Like... Yeah, but even like all the way through, it never felt like patronizing or anything like that. It's clearly aimed at kids, but it never feels like, you know, it never goes, it doesn't feel like the Teletubbies, where it's just entertainment for just to keep them distracted. It's, you know, it's there to teach a lesson.
Yeah, I suppose. It captures a now fairly dated childhood, doesn't it? I mean, there's no...
Mm.
It's the childhood people nostalgically think of or want to have had, even if they haven't had, which is just innocently playing in the snow. I mean, as innocent as pretending you're having a war is. But, like, you know, it's skiing and toboggans and snowball fights rather than, you know, video games and fast food joints and stuff, isn't it? You know, like it's a nice suburban or slightly rural Canadian upbringing. That Abby, I presume your dad had this exact lifestyle growing up, like just snowball fights and building forts and things in Canada.
Yeah, and he had three brothers. Yeah, three brothers,
and they definitely did some hardcore sledding. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a nice wholesome, it's a wholesome setup. But actually, I like the interactions with the kids because they feel the writing and I suppose the acting and delivery feels authentic. Like they talk and argue like kids of slightly different ages do. The way they bicker or chat to each other and over each other a little bit, I thought that was like spot on for this age. Like, what age would you say they are? Like. 9 to 12?
Kind of just before teenage years, I suppose. Yeah.
Which makes it all the weirder when it has a slightly romantic storyline going through it, and you're like, oh god, I don't need this. I don't need anything about kids, you know, getting off of each other. They don't. You know, it's not graphic, but it is just like, okay. do I root for this? Normally I would. Like,
yeah, there was one moment where it was a bit cringe, but mostly it wasn't quite a love story. It was more of a kind of like a girl and I'm interested in her for some reason. It never quite gets there, but you know, it's a more like burgeoning feelings.
Yeah,
than a love story, I suppose.
Is it that transition between coming out of the age where you think, oh, girls are stinky, and to actually, oh, I think I want to hang around with girls. I don't really know what I want to do, but I like them a bit, if I'm honest. Must be weird for you, Abby. You on the other side. Me and Anthony obviously have the male perspective to some extent. And you, as a girl, did you relate to any of the not, like... I get not the inherent sexism of boys and girls playing together, but like, you know, did you relate to some of the women in this or all of it? I mean, come on, bring in your woman's perspective there for a sec.
Well, I'd say it was more about boys, but I did like getting that sort of look at boys in like the way they behave at that age.
So you mean you don't know what gangs of boys putting up forts and snowball fights is usually like, or?
Yeah,
but you would have hung out and like you would have got, you know, played with other children and stuff. So you're not completely naive to it. You haven't grown up in a circle of only girls, though, have you?
No, but there is at that age there is still a kind of gender divide.
Yeah,
yeah, it's more, and it's a different sort of place as well, because where I grew up, there wasn't really, you know, snow forts and skiing.
That is true. But what I liked about the film is it could have been a very boy film because, you know, wars are often fought by chaps. Even now, the women are in the minority. But we did have each of the two feuding sides of the snowball war had ladies in it initially begrudgingly. Like, there was a sort of, there were no women planned to be, or girls planned to be in the fight, and then they sort of joined as battle lines were drawn. It would have been a shame if they'd have gone, oh, well, girls aren't involved in this sort of thing. Boys and girls in this, there's lots of interesting characters and lots of, you know, strong, not role models because they're just kids, but strong character types that I enjoyed. So lots of positives to begin the film, I would say.
I want to give credit across the board, really, to all the actors in this. I am not backwards about coming forward with my opinion on child actors, but all of these guys were pretty good.
Yeah, so often they're shit. And none of them looked like, none of them behaved like they were delivering lines down a camera. You feel like you're an observer within a child group, which is really weird, because once you leave that age group, you never really get to go back in that world again, if you know what I mean. Like, so it's instant nostalgia, I think, for when you used to all go about as a gang together and, like, talk a lot of shit. Well, you all sort of bragging to each other, and you all pretend you know stuff, but you're all a little bit ignorant, so you say daft things to each other and fight and say weird little phrases. Like with that kid who's always saying, like, I'll bet you a buck something or other will happen. Like, I think the phrase when we were kids was, oh, Tenor says he doesn't blah blah blah. Oh, Tenor says you can't jump on that wall. Oh God, Tenors. Dear. Anyway, the film kind of weirdly begins with, I guess, one of our main characters, who's, like, it's all about a group of kids, but, like, Luke, is that his name? He's like a blonde kid, and he gets up and he looks for a bugle in his attic.
Yes, Luke.
Yeah.
I suppose, if anyone, he's kind of the main character, but not really.
He is a focus of the film, because he has a romantic storyline. He's also the leader of one of the teams, and kind of the kid who sort of holds court and sort of sets up the parameters of what they're going to do for an hour and a half of the film. But there's this show and tell in school, and we just get a sense, like, they're just rushing through it because it's like the last day. Setting up, it's like the Christmas holiday break is coming, and there's a piss easy show and tell for the teacher just to sit back and sort of smoke cigarettes and not give a fuck. She doesn't smoke cigarettes. But, like, you know, it's a very much a, oh, it's not that you're not, like, I think she says to one of the kids, it's not that it's not interesting, but let's crack on. We have to have one more person.
Yeah.
And then he's about to explain, like, this bugle, and he's about to play it, and it's like, ring, time for fucking holiday, see you next year. We're not getting that bugle played till much later, and then it's not even significantly played.
I did enjoy that scene, because, I don't know, just like, it just rung true. I think the person who presents something has just got, like, a book and just says, this is my thing because it looks good, the end, bye.
There was some nice heckling as well.
Yeah, and then another one brings up, like, a third place award, and it's like, yes, of course, it's a third place award, and stuff like that. Especially after, like, the first scene, which felt slightly out of place.
Like, he was setting up gremlins or something, like the kid was going to get spooked in his attic or something, I felt.
Yeah, that first scene played it a bit more dramatic, like, there was going to be, like, deeper, like, meanings and feelings going on around, like, this boy's grandfather or something. Which never really comes up.
Yeah, that was a weird one. It's sort of like, they set up as MacGuffin and then it's just nothing.
Yeah, I think he wears, like, a World War II hat or whatever over his already hatted head in one of the battles. And he plays the bugle and, you know, he brings up his granddad and I guess he has this respect for him. But I guess that's to tie it to real war more directly. Because a snowball fight doesn't necessarily make you think, oh, this is an allegory for battles of the past, you know? So, I don't know. I have no real problems. It just sets up the thing. And I almost think, why put in the teacher and have the mum in it later? Almost would be better if this film, artistically speaking, left out all adult characters like Charlie Brown or something. It's a lot like Charlie Brown at times because of the sense of humour and the way the kids are slightly adult, slightly, you know, retarded.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're right. They're very much... The adults really do not play much of a part in it. And then it kind of... to tie in with, like, the ending of the film, like, it would have made that make more sense, because I was... Even though it's, like, a slap in the face and it's really dramatic, there are still a few questions of, like, well... Like, why haven't they gone to tell an adult about this? Which I guess wouldn't have been a thing if there weren't any adults in the film.
Yeah, it felt...
It would have felt a bit more self-contained then, if you know what I mean.
The ending felt rushed as well, considering it's quite a dramatic thing. We'll stop beating about the bush in a minute.
Mm.
We'll talk about the dog in the room, right? I think we'll deal with that next, but... I would say it didn't make sense to not have an adult part of it. It felt, oh, right, slap your hands, like, we're done, that's the film. Quickly finish, try and uplift the mood slightly before we put the credits up. And it was like, I don't know, I think the fallout of what happens should have been, like you say, more... That was the one time it wasn't realistic, because a bunch of kids essentially deal with the corpse of a dog, which is, you know... Hang on now. Surely there should be A, tears and crying more than there are, and B, oh my god, get an adult, let alone... like, they bury it, and do they, like, put peat on it and stuff? And it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck's going on? but yeah, that's the elephant in the room, the dog in the room, the dog in the fort, whatever you want to call it, is that we have an ongoing story through the... Well, essentially, the film is basically kids playing snowball fights, and it's a bit like a proper battle. It's like a big, you know, for them, serious thing over the Christmas holidays, which are surprisingly short. It felt like it was over before it began, as far as holidays go. And the whole film is like about that. But through it, there's a dog, and the dog is called Cleo, and it's a Saint Bernard, and it's having a rough time.
Mm.
And it's like its narrative arc is so fucking tragic, because essentially. It's, I mean, Abby, maybe you don't want to because it's upsetting, but would you want to explain Cleo's role in the film?
Well, the family have just recently had a baby.
Which are one of the families of the kids involved in the fight.
The adult owners of Cleo have just had a baby, which means now all of the attention is on the baby and not the dog. So the dog starts to get jealous and starts acting up, but they don't deal with it properly, so then they start, like, putting it outside. They make it a dog kennel to go outside, so the dog gets more and more depressed and starts acting out more and more, and then eventually follows... What's his name?
I think it's Mark.
Yeah, follows Mark to... the snowball fight, because he's the only one paying her any attention,
and gets caught in a fence to like to add to the tension. So like the massive battle's happening. I'll take over just because it's so sad. Well, but like, you know, Cleo, she isn't being mistreated, by the way. Like she has like her outside kennel built by the kids, like, and all the kids are nice to the dog. I mean, one of them uses her to, like, bring groceries, and that kind of kicks off the battle, in fact. Like, we'll come back to that. But, essentially, everyone's nice to the dog. The parents aren't necessarily mean. It's just, it's an adjustment for the dog, and it's, like you say, acting up, being more aggressive, because it doesn't understand, you know, the reason things have changed, which is there's a baby in the house and things. So, everyone's super nice. Like, Mark, I think, gives the hot dog to the dog to try and cheer it up, but it's just depressed and not interested. And then when it eventually yanks its chain loose from the dog kennel it's had built and follows everyone to where all the kids are playing, like, snowball fights, it just wanders into the ruckus, sits down in, like, a dugout bit of snow under the fortress they've built. And then when the battle is at its peak, the fortress collapses. And instead of, like, oh my god, we got to save the dog, and, like... You just dig out the dog and it's you take it to the vets and it gets its, like, leg put in a bandage. It's fucking dead, mate. It's fucking cold and dead and crushed to death by children and snow. Fuck you. That's the allegory for war. The innocent always die. Fuck off. cry yourself to sleep now, kids. We're now going to bury the dog and try and carry on like, oh, it's fine that we've just buried a dog in a shallow grave with a very brief funeral. And all the kids are like, oh, it was quite a fun holiday anyway, wasn't it? Was it? Hasn't that ruined everything? Don't you not want to ever play snowball fights again? And they're all happy to build a fort in future, but... I mean, a few of the kids, like go back to the fort and punch some bricks and knock the fort down aggressively to get out their sadness and anger a bit. But then they kind of enjoy it a lot as well, so I don't know how much they get across the tragedy of it all, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Like, the ending is very rushed in that regard. But then again, in a way, it is kids, and kids don't tend to linger on things like adults do. So it kind of rings true in that way, where they don't quite know how to process it, so they just kind of ignore it.
Better to focus on the fun that was had. Because they have a fucking awesome snowball battle. Like, it's a proper epic winter battle of fun, and like, it's a, you know, it's the sort of, it's really, you know, lots of different things happen to them across the few days it takes place over. So there's a lot of fun things that happen. Oh, do you remember that day where X happened, or that moment when Thingy did this? So I'm not taking it away that they have a lot of positive memories from that time, but it is just like, come on, do we need to kill the dog? I mean, that's awful. Why kill a dog in any film? I mean, just why do it? So many films take the easy emotional route of murdering a dog. And it's just another one. I mean, you know, it's the 80s, so there hasn't been as many dog murders in movies for the sake of it. But I felt, though it's an apt metaphor for the innocent who get murdered in warfare, which is maybe what the film's angling for, you feel like, oh, come on, just keep it light, you know? Don't fucking... Just, and also, snow might not kill the dog. I mean,
that was my thing. I'm not sure that the accident was actually big enough to kill a dog.
Yeah.
Especially a dog as big as that. Fucking massive.
They also have the little brother of one of the people in the war. His kid, like the kid brother of, I'm going to call him Four Eyes, because that's what they all refer to him as. But there's like an Asian kid who's sort of the architect of the fort and the slightly bullied, slightly ignored character. And his brother, who he ignores and tells to piss off most of the time, he's digging into the fort and you're like, this kid's going to die, isn't he? You kind of assume it's going to all fall on him. And no one's really paying attention to him digging in. And they have the comedy moment where he, like, they invade the snow fortress and then someone falls in the hole. I think it's Luke. And it's like, well, what are you doing down here? And it's kind of funny. And it's like, oh, we're not going with the... Like, you feel like there's going to be a tragedy. Someone, you know, loses an eye or breaks a bone or something. Or indeed dies. But I don't know. The fact that it was the dog is just so more, oh, really?
And the moment isn't really set up either. It just kind of happens.
Which is probably how when a snow fortress falls in, it probably just happens all of a sudden amongst all the chaos.
But you know what I mean? I mean, they have, you know, obviously they have the shots of the dog coming and going into the hole and and laying there, coming and going into the hole. Anyway,
it's kind of funny, though. Like, not in the innuendo sense, but like... It's funny because all the kids are playing and they're fighting and the dog's like not bothered and just sitting there. And the melancholy expression of the dog is kind of amusing within the context. So then to just have it murdered as a kind of thing, it's like, oh, I don't know. It doesn't feel like the best way to have done it. And it's not just, oh, you can't have sadness in a kid's thing. It's literally just, well, why?
Just a bit of foreshadowing, like just so you could be a little bit prepared. I don't know.
Yeah, if the killing the dog is a must, can the dog be like super old or like, do you know, like we had all the dog has had is it's been replaced by a baby and it's had a difficult time, and then it dies. And it's like, oh, so that thread can fuck itself, but tackling the rest of the stuff, I think it's a really interesting and fun movie, and it's certainly. It's got lots of scenes that are worth sort of bringing up. But we had to deal with that, because that was the fucking...
Yeah, it's... You can't not start off with that, can you? I mean...
No.
But you're right. Like, the whole of the rest of the film is a really fun, kind of intriguing and quick-paced film, and we really should be focusing on that, I suppose.
Yeah, so that we kind of react to it as it's impactful, a well-done, shame on you film, but I don't know, it's not what I would do with the story, but whatever. Back to the fun, light-hearted stuff. So the war is kind of set up by Luke as I'm into soldiering and stuff in my, like, I'm kind of interested in that. So we should have a snowball fight, classic winter thing to do in, like, a place that has thick snow. Like, so basically there's, like, it's almost like a kind of political commentary about how wars are started and how it's about, like, winning prizes and things. But they have, like, this idea that everyone donates something to the, is it a bounty or something they call it?
Yeah, that's what they keep calling it.
And there's, how many are there? Was there 7 on one side and 3 on the other? So, and then a few people are added in later.
Hmm.
But, like, a bunch of them all gather in, like, a shed. Oh, they, in the shed, of course. Where else would they meet? I think someone, it's like, it's very obvious they're going to meet in the shed. But, like, they all sort of decide as a group of boys they're going to have a war and there should be some rules. And, say, Abby, do you remember any of the rules and stuff they discussed as terms of how the battle should work?
Only during daylight, only wooden swords and away from the town. There was only about 6, but I can't remember them.
What did you...
No civilians.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah, that's why they were away from the town, is so they don't hurt any civilian.
Hurt, yeah. Because they got wooden sticks and snowballs to fuck you up. Put a rock in there. Oh. Sure. I mean, it's sort of... For a bloodthirsty act of villainy, you know, they're trying to be gentlemanly, like in the battles that were fought in fields to decide which countries owned which countries, rather than your, you know, modern destroy your enemy warfare. This is more, it's meant to be a more gentlemanly, soldierly, you know, affair, I think. It's also a game, so, you know, it makes sense to have, like, you know, tea breaks and curfews and things. Abby, what did you make of the kids all fighting and interacting and arguing about the ins and outs of what would happen and the picking sides and all this?
That was all very well observed. My opinion about this film in general is that it's all about its small moments. If you talk about the plot in general, not that much happens, but it's about these little, just the observations that they've had about kids and how kids operate. And the sneaky stuff, like, the girl manages to get them to throw away all their snowballs by suggesting that they can't throw them very far.
Yeah, you're right. There's loads of moments that stand out, and it is about an observation, yeah. That's exactly it. Like, one of the first ones, I would say, is in order to pick teams, there's some debate as to how they should do it in a fair way, and then they come to the conclusion that, well, just if everyone just picks sides, that's like a war, isn't it? Like, no one, you don't split everyone evenly like a football match. So they all just decide who they're going to be with, and they sort of, there's the two twins who are like, oh, if we're not on the same side, we can't talk, and that's going to be awkward, I don't want to. And so they just divide, and they divide unevenly into groups of friends or whatever. And so there's 3-on-7, and then Luke is the more, like, assertive one, so he decides that the main base they would have is the shed garage thing. And then the others are kind of narked. Like, the one Asian kid, Four Eyes, he's like, he's all about building a fort. And so he's got, like, grand plans for a massive, mega snow fortress. So that's kind of their, oh, you build the fort then. And they're all a bit pissed off because, like, this isn't fair. You know, you guys have just dictated the rules, which is kind of how war works. You know, there's a lot of similarities to how stupid men decide things are going to happen when it comes to global politics and things. But they poody off and they take all their, like, some of the knickknacks. Like, there's a little globe and a Laurel and Hardy figurine. Like, I kind of want this box of knickknacks. What would you guys put? What would be your bounty item? What childhood thing would you be like, this is the treasure I'm submitting?
Some kind of sticker book, probably.
Oh, I had a full 1998 football sticker book. That's like that would wipe out all the prizes, really. Full, complete with all the shinies and everything, mate. I wouldn't be donating that shit. Maybe you could donate a big wadge of them. Like, if you win this, you get like.
Maybe like a big wadge of doublers or something.
Yeah. What about you, Hubby?
I'm trying to work out if the dates line up. Maybe like a Bret Hart action figure or something.
It's a good one. I mean, I had a broken Bret Hart. He had a gammy arm that would swing freely around his hip bone or whatever. Hip bone? That doesn't make sense. Shoulder joint. So mine would be shit. I'd have to edge my bets because I'd be like, well, I don't want something. If it's something I prize mightily, then I'm not donating that shit. So it has to be something other people might want, but I'm not so fussed on.
Pogs, Rich. Pogs.
Oh, mate, I love my pogs. They're like the classic get you into like gambling like kids thing, <aren't they? laughs> basically like poker chips, but more fun. Maybe you twist my arm, Anthony, and you're like, Rich, I know there's some stickers in there you need for your 1998 football thing to be completed. I'd be like, fine, you can have some of my classy Tazos. My hard-to-find Tazos. Yeah, so there we go. But the war doesn't just start because they decide. They kind of like, the smaller team fucks off, and they're like, we're not fighting you, you'll see. And so the seven remaining boys who want to play, they're like throwing snowballs and saying, you'll fight, and they all this like, it. Yeah. It's like, and that seems fitting, that you can't agree sensibly to have a fight. You have to almost force it, and they do. But I think they just bombard the kids who don't want to play with snowballs, and then that gets one of the girls in, doesn't it? Like, they're like one of the characters, is it Mark or Matt, or I can't remember now who it was. Who's the dog owner, isn't it? Mark.
But there's also Pierre, who I thought was Mark for a while, but was just some other guy, and I think he's like the leader of the other team.
It's a little confusing, isn't it? Because we're not sure if all the names are the same in the French. Because you watched the French version, we don't know if we got the same names for everyone. That's partly why I'm like, just call them by however we feel they're best described, like the twins, or the big kid, or like the red jacket, or Luke, because he's the bugle boy, like, you know. So, anyway, the point is, you know, snowballs are thrown at victims, like innocent women on the battlefield, or some groceries are spilt. Oh, that's it. They Cleo is duped into pulling a cart of groceries further than she should be. Snowballs are thrown, Cleo runs off, groceries are tipped, snowballs are thrown, girls are hit, eggs are thrown, battle fucking on. A twin gets egged, and they're not best pleased, and the shit gets serious, you know?
They're really precious about those fucking gillets they're wearing.
Oh, they're so lame. Like, this is a buffet of terrible courts. I can't decide who's wearing the worst snow clothes, like, fashion disaster. It's all just thrift store South Park characters, one after the other, isn't it?
No, so fuck. Yes.
They just, just awful. I liked when they start wearing quite comical, like, battle clothes, and when they get shields and mad helmets for one of the later battles, it's quite fun. But
the basketball helmets, they were my favourite.
Yeah, the twins are wearing basketballs. I think someone's got two plastic bowling ball pins on their head at one point. Obviously, hockey garb is used. There's a mop on one kid for some reason on their head. Abby, do you remember any of the wacky outfits?
There was too many. There was a smorgasbord of weird clothing. And because they were kids bought with candy, they were all too small to actually be effective. So they couldn't get over the wall. They were slow because they can't run very fast. It was just right clusterfuck.
But then that's like a nice allegory for mercenaries. So if you're not winning the battles, you pay for your soldiers, and they're not worth as much. When you pay mercenaries, I liked that there was some argument about the kids who were already in the battle didn't get any candy because they didn't need to be bought because they're already involved. So I like that's a slight social commentary about mercenary fighting in warfare and buying more soldiers. There's even a kid who there's a snowmobile a couple of times in the film.
Oh yeah,
and a kid just comes to battle. He's got a massive eye-shaped metal frame with like ribbons on that he's driving, and it just crashes and falls off, and it's like, fuck was that? What was he planning with that thing, contraption? like to just mow down loads of children, or?
Oh, it's the big. I think it just looked like that because he'd done that before, and he just wanted something that looked a bit weird, and he just hadn't thought it through.
Maybe he watched Mad Max, the original one, and was like, "I want a cool vehicle to smash into people."
It was a strong play. I'll give him that.
But he didn't fit through the fence, so. Yeah, so the fashion is incredible. But the Gillet come up more than once later, because one of the other anecdotal things that happened. So the battle is on because they've made it serious now. And so there's a couple of girls on one side, and I think there's a girl on the other side. There's some arguing, but they basically go with it, right? You've got more people on your side, that's cool. There's like that snowball trick happens, and the girls are allowed to play, and blah, blah, blah. And one of the things that happens, the dirty war tactics that are employed at one point, is one of the teams decides we're going to put paint in the snowballs. So there's like green, blue, red paint. And then they attack them. And obviously it stains all their clothes and their faces. And they're very emotionally hurt, but also kind of in trouble because their clothes are covered in paint and they can't get it off because it's sort of pseudo-permanent.
And one guy's got it in the face.
Yeah, there's a few of them that get a bit of green faced. And again, the two twins are like, really butthurt and upset. And there's lots of people pointing out where the others have got paint while they're covered in paint. And everyone's just sort of sad and hurt and like, well, it's not in the rules that you're not allowed to do that. And I don't know, is it an allegory for chemical warfare? What do you guys reckon?
Yeah, well, kind of. How, like, even though there are rules, they say there are rules to war, there really aren't rules to war, are there?
No, and so when you up the game or come up with a new inventive trick, it's like, well, you fucked it, it's just tough tits.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There's also a weird parlay in the church, which is an interesting commentary, I think, because, you know, a church being sanctuary in a sort of neutral zone, symbolic enough as it is and relevant. But
and
like,
it was on Christmas Day as well, was it?
They're having like the most boring Christmas Day then. No one give a fuck about presents. There's choir singing, but no adults around. It felt like I felt more like it was a choir practice, you know?
Maybe. It's just because he mentioned like it's Christmas and all wars have truces at Christmas kind of thing.
Yeah, but they clearly didn't film on a day. I don't know, they just didn't use enough extras to convey busy Christmas church, because it was literally an empty church. Quite like some of the boys were singing in the choir, and then like three of them had gone in to fiddle with the manger and like talk shit and just be fiddling with bits and props in the church. And then I think, is it Luke has come in because he's sort of interested in one of the girls on the opposite team or drama. So I think, yeah, Sophie's on one team and Luke's on another, and they're, oh, yeah, hello, let's hang out after battle hours and talk. And there's a little bit of, you know, chemistry and tension of a sexual nature between them, I suppose. And Luke sort of, I don't know if she's in there or not. He wants to parlay. I can't remember. I'm getting my character. Even the boys and girls are mixed up after a while because they're all in just fucking winter clothes and beanies and stuff. But there's a parlay. Does anyone understand, like, what was to be gained from the chat? Because there's lots of things going on. Because there's people who think, oh, is this a boot? Is this a setup and a trap? And we're not even sure if it's Christmas Day or not. Does anyone?
Yeah. I think it's kind of, at this point, Luke has got an interest in Sophie, but she's on the other team. And because of the rules that he set up, he can't talk to her.
Outside,
you see what I mean?
Yeah, which is a nice, again, allegory for a real war. You'd not be able to talk to people on the other side of it in other countries and things.
So I think this is a kind of his attempt to try and, you know, get and like make a truce and try and talk to her through all the other people who were there as well.
Yeah, it's a little parlay of, can we put a pause on the war so I can do the child equivalent of get laid, like whatever that is. Get a smooch or hold hands or whatever, or make friends with a girl. Yeah, but it just ends in like more confusion and arguing, and they all end up just parting again and going back at the regular battle, innit? So one of the things I think is quite fun is all of the times they actually have quite a serious fight. So once the fort's built, what did people make of the fort? Because it was super awesome and cool, and yet inexplicably good.
It was ridiculously good. Like, I don't know how they would have built that. Saying that, there was a ton of snow. More snow than I think I've ever seen in my life.
We don't see them lay one foundation brick or snowball. But I could conceive it being that large. But the architecture and structure is, like, fair play. This is a huge fort for children to have built. And it's got loads of cool... It's like the ultimate fort anyone would want. I've built some dens and some forts in my time.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say maybe nothing comes close to what they did.
But then maybe just all we lacked were the materials. Because, you know, we had stuff like, you know, old wooden crates and
tin sheets,
discarded and trolleys and stuff like that. Whereas they had, like, an infinite amount of snow. So maybe if we had that kind of resource, you know, maybe we could have. Maybe.
They're descendants, potentially, from Inuits in Canada, some of them. Maybe. Maybe not. They look pre-Caucasian. But there could be some.
No, they're pretty sure they're all French descendants.
Oh, yeah. But then, no, but they would have been. They're more likely to come across igloo builders than we are as well. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Abby, have you ever built forts? Is it something you can relate to? Or and how did you react to their castle?
All my forts were indoors.
Mm.
Like pillow ones.
And, well, no, see, when you've got a big dinner table, fucking no-brainer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just dress it, cover up the sides, you're done. You're done.
Yeah. So what did you think this was a plausible fort that these kids could have built? Like, it's pretty nifty.
The walls and stuff, fine. But, like, slides and things like that, that's a bit much.
Yeah, well, that's it. It has one of the things I liked about it is it has a false door. So they've got like a house wooden door on the front, and that's like just a trick door so that people think they can just barge in and get in easy. But it's fake. And they also hide things like rope ladders behind it later on. And that's very crafty and clever. They also have they have like a food area inside the castle. Like, it's your typical, like, you know, one turret, zipper, like, well, I can't think of how to describe the top of a castle. Like your classic castle top, where it's like up and down squares.
Turret is fine.
Yeah, but you've got your classic castle shape, and then you've got like a hidden slide, which has like a false door on one of the walls for when they have the coolest exit ever.
Yeah, they do.
And it's just one of the successful like strikes on the fort, where they've kind of got a ladder and they've figured out like what to do to get into the fort, which is hold the ladder down properly and don't pansy about. You just fucking get into that fort and get those bastards. And then the kids who are trying to hold the fort, there's not enough of them, so they bail out of like down a toboggan, out the side of the wall and down the hill. And it's like, that might be the coolest thing a child has ever done. That's badass.
It's true.
What a moment. And I like that the girl is trapped in there after hours, and she's like getting like she's trying to make up for the fact that she wasn't in one of the battles. And I think it's Sophie uses the hidden rope ladder to climb in and get the walkie-talkie and take the flag down that they've put in there. And she chucks out some. They know about the hole now, and she chucks out a crate of snowballs to get the kids out of the way. And then they think there's another one coming down, but she's hidden in the box and slides down the cliff as well, down the hill as well. And it's just like, oh, this is the most badass. It's got hidden places, a food area. They got one of them stupid like mirror, like what are the things that come out of submarines called?
Like a periscope thing.
Yeah, they've made a periscope. You know, they got all kinds of siege tools. The other kids have got like equipment. Like this is some serious shit, you know. I was envious of these kids and their awesome fortress.
I was envious too.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was almost like they turned heel, because you're a bit like, you fucking bastard.
They had all the answers. The smallest team, the underdogs, if you want, had loads of good moments where they like outthought the more, you know, basic fighters. The larger team were just more straightforward, you know, and they had less tricks up their sleeve. I don't know, it was a nice underdog story at times. Oh, just a super cool fort. Like, that's one of the things that just it makes it a good kids film, because kids will watch and go, oh, I want that, that's awesome. It's like loads of great kids films have things you're envious of.
I want the boat.
Who doesn't want to slide out of a fortress and down a bank and be like, fuck y'all, whoop whoop, we're escaping. The only way it could have been better if they'd have been on like a jet ski. Or maybe someone jet ski up the ramp into the fort, and that would have been a good too, but I don't know. It's kind of, when the bigger group does get loads of mercenaries, like Abby mentioned, and they're like loads of smaller kids paid, and they're wearing ridiculous sort of armaments and things, they're so shit they can't get over a piddly wall, that when you cut further away, they could have just walked around anyway. Like, they've cut only a few twigs and ribbons in the way, and they're like, oh, it's like fucking no man's land, help me. The other team is kind of pitiful a lot of the time. But there's loads of sneaky things that happen, like because you have the day break, because your nighttime breaks happen, after hours activities go on. So either people sneak into the shed and do something, or there's a really good scene, actually the scene where the Sophie escapes is kind of epic, and there's the nighttime chase.
Just that the bit with like the prolonged skiing?
There is some skiing, but I think she's running away at the, like she runs away.
Oh, they go up that really steep hill that slows it down a bit too much.
Like, yeah, directly after they kind of chase her into the woods, and it's instantly dark, as you do. Yeah, she kind of like fools them, steals one of their flashlights and runs off, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think there's not loads of tension or anything, but there's a sense of all these boys have been outwitted and out, like, ran by a girl, and there's a sort of sense of shame about it. And I did like the scene that follows it up, where all the sort of team Snow Fortress are all in there in someone's like basement house, and they're having a little chat about the day. And then one of the twins comes with one of the skis that they got belonging to Sophie, and he's like, "Oh, God, if you want to see a ski again, fucking, you got to surrender or whatever." And he's like, "Give my torch back," and he's like, "I haven't worn the battery down yet. Fuck you." Mm-hmm. And he just sort of stumbles over his ski, and it just looks like a fool. And I just like the fact that there's a funny moment for the. I think it's the underdogs. Team Snow Fortress are the underdogs in this film, I think. Not to use the word underdog too harshly, because, I mean, there's a dog under a load of snow, and that's sad.
But,
Oh,
it's too soon. Too soon. But I like the one-upmanship in it, and I like the craftiness the kids have to come up with to sort of get each other. It's like a proper food.
But always just like in the back of your mind, you're always aware that what they're trying to say about actual war, and then kind of linking it to like to children as well, and you know, essentially saying that even you know, when people are starting wars, you're just being big kids at the end of the day, aren't you?
Yeah, that's a fair point, isn't it? It's suggesting real war is childish in its nature. There's also a nice sort of, I don't know, like, I kind of like the drama between the kind of lovers-ish, I mean, you know, let's not be mental, they're still children, but the kind of girlfriend-boyfriend development that slightly happens. After war hours, you know, Luke and Sophie are sort of maybe slightly interested in each other. And there's a sense of, well, we can't be friends because we're on different sides of the war and the battle. And the pause isn't going to happen. And then there's the, will, like, not, like, throwing snowballs at the person that you, like, you're interested in. And then you have to because you're kind of committed. And then they're, well, you've fought me, so I'll have to fight you. This isn't, like, I like the fact that Luke's a bit peeved that he's being treated like any other person. But yeah, I really liked the pettiness of Luke and Sophie. Once the snowballs had to be thrown, there was no mercy and no, well, I might fancy you, but you're on their side, damn it. Like, it's good to have people who want to be friends but can't because of the battle lines, you know?
I'm actually surprised they didn't split up the twins. Because that could have been like a whole other point then about like
they would have been
war.
Visually confusing.
Yeah, you would have known true. Who.
Although they were trying to make a point at the beginning about, you know, family is more important than war or whatever.
But there's a bunch of good lines in this thing that
are you thinking of There was one that's like, what's the point? Oh, I can't remember. Exactly. But like, essentially, like what's why have a war when you have to kill people? Oh, sorry.
Why let like. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to have to look it up now. One of the lines that's particularly iconic, and apparently got used as an anti-war phrase, was, war's not a reason to hurt each other.
Mm.
And that's a good line. And there's loads of little moments like that where there's an undercurrent of saying something about the wider picture, but also quite funny lines for kids to spout out and very kid-like things to say. I like that about it. There's not a whole bunch of other scenes other than the big battle scene, which we kind of talked about, which ends the dog's life brilliantly. But it's fun. Like, it's really raucous. Like, there's loads of kids all fighting. It looks fun. There's loads going on. It's fairly nicely shot. And it's got playful moments where, like, oh, Abby, there's a little kid who looks like you when you were a toddler.
Yeah, what's that? Like, I get really confused by these two seemingly outsiders who just weren't part of the war.
Well, the neutral party, yeah.
But, no, it was...
Nick, the loony?
Yeah, the loony was...
Just say it so casually. Nick the loony, the nickname of one of the kids who won't participate in the war.
His cousin had come. So they were both watching together.
Was it a girl or a boy? Because on the dub, it sounded like a girl. It looked like a girl. It looked like you when you were a child, Abby. It's incredible. Like, she had a little Baker Boy hat and red and black coat and scarf and stuff.
Wasn't his name Daniel?
Yeah, like Danny could be Danielle. But it sounded like a... Was it... Did it have a boy's voice in the French version?
Pass.
Well, sorry if you've hurt by being... thought of as at least androgynous actor, child who's probably much older now, probably older than us, in fact.
It's a child, they are androgynous, technically.
Yeah, they all look a bit girly and boyish at times, all of them. But the point is, this kid is like a journalist on the battlefield and is taking pictures of them mid-fight in their armour and stuff, and nicely gets hit by a snowball, because that's what happens to reporters in actual wars. They get hit by snowballs. But I liked that the Nick the Loony was like a kind of interesting character. He was like a comedy at times. He was in both sides' parties just hanging out. And then when war happened, he was disinterested and would piss off like Switzerland or Ireland or something in World War II and not participate. And so it's good to have a neutral party in there. And I liked the moment he had with the bear trap or the fox trap or whatever, where he tries to stop the war by feigning injury. And I don't like it was sort of weird because his friend Danny was sort of using a megaphone they had nicked or borrowed to tell everyone that like Nick the Loony had got hurt in a fox trap. Is that right?
And to continue to use it inappropriately. Mm. Like while they're far away using it, fine. When they're quite close, still using it, not fine.
And there's a lovely bit of double act stuff where Nick is saying what telling Danny to say. And so Danny shouts a load of stuff and then says some of the things that should just be for them to know. And then having to correct and just making a kind of arse of it all. And there's a sense, no one's sure if it's real or not. It's obviously a bit dubious and some of them state as such. There's like some kind of ploy or trap or he's joined someone's side. But they all gather around and eventually all start laughing at the fact that it was a joke and kind of a waste of time. I felt like Nick was trying to get the war to stop. Because he's not interested, but it also, how would this end? Like, you get carted off to hospital? Like, what scenario did you envision other than attention-seeking?
Like, it did feel a bit, with him, it did feel a bit like they were trying too much to make a point about something, which I'm not sure what it was. Especially as there was the scene where... It's the last kind of battle at the fort, and the two of those guys kind of turn up, and Danny goes off and into the war to take pictures, and then the other guy just kind of like slowly turns around and walks away up the hill to like slightly more dramatically sad music, and like what's going on here?
Like he's some kind of sagely person who understands that peace is the only way, and it's like. I mean, all right, neutral countries don't usually do it because they know best. They're just trying to look after themselves. It's not like a, Ah, the folly of war. We are so wise. But also, it didn't... You know, he hung around with them and stuff and was just sort of hanging out. I don't know how poignant it really was that he buggered off and wasn't interested.
Mm.
Maybe he just has different hobbies that they can join in. Maybe he likes ice skating or something. But, you know, I mean, we get what they're going for. It wasn't that terrible. It did hold on him in a bit of a corny way, but it's a minor fault, really, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. It was just one of the moments that I think didn't quite work in fitting nicely in the allegorical mold it's trying to tell you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's lots of little things that are worth enjoying in the film. Like, there's some tactical retreats that are kind of funny, some bits of banter, some castle interactions, some discussions and things the kids have. And there's a wealth of little conversations and moments that are enjoyable. And it's very quickly paced. And I did enjoy just the brevity the film has while it's simultaneously reminding you of a more innocent time.
Yeah. Any favourite characters? Because I think my favourite character was the younger sister of Sophie.
Yeah, go on, why?
I don't know, I think it's just a thing. I like in films where I like the precocious kind of younger, straight-talking girl. I don't know why.
She was funny.
Yeah, she's not taking shit from anyone.
Exactly.
Yeah, but also she's, you know, extremely kind, and she's the one kind of helping build, she comes out and rallies, and she like fights off the first kind of wave of boys, even though there's just two of them against like eight.
Yeah.
And then she's the one helping Mark build
the
kennel for her. I don't know, she just seemed really just a good person.
Yeah. I found it quite funny, even on the dub particularly, the big kid who was a bit older, like, I know he does things like fuddle petrol out of the car or a tractor or something. But he's got loads of, like, dim comments. Like, he doesn't know lots of, like, Luke is using lots of army terms for things. And he's like, what the hell does that mean? Why did you just say throw the snowballs instead of fire at will or whatever? Like, and so he has loads of funny lines where he comes across like a bit of a lummox or a dimwit. But he's not stupid. He's just, you know, big and sort of... funny sounding, especially like with the dub, makes him sound a bit odd. I think maybe did he sound weird in French when he was talking, the big kid?
No, not really.
Yeah, Abby, what about you?
The big kid was one of my favourites, but then I was at a soft spot for the big kid.
Oh, what do you think of the twins? I found them the most annoying, but that's kind of their comedy purpose.
Like they had that very sort of like the only. I feel so sad that this is the only for sure reference that I have for that kind of comedy, but it's in Dude, Where Is My Car, where they're doing the dude sweet. That.
Two dumb idiots.
But it's a very old type of comedy. Like going all the way back to black and white.
Yeah. I mean, they do kind of reference it because at the beginning they have Laurel and Hardy on their, like, bedroom... No, like, they have their posters on each of their bedroom doors.
Ah, maybe... But yeah, that makes sense. I mean, there's definitely links to the type of slapstick they did as well. But yeah, like, I also... There's a few side character kids that were perfectly good and reasonable, but they didn't have that one moment. Like, the Asian kid with the glasses, he had a lot of moments because he had an annoying younger brother who was always following around, and yet he was bullied, and he had all the grand plans and things, so he was like the mastermind of some of the better ideas. Also, the kids came up with inventions, like they had snow cannons and snow trebuchets and slingshots and things, and they came up with some good stuff. There was some useful weapon. I liked one of the moments where they got into the fort and they were like arguing about who'd eaten all the cookies and things, and they had the spoils of war from invading the fort, and they wouldn't let Nick the loony have any because if he joined he could have some food or drink, but he kind of pooted off then. But I like that they find like a trumpet with a stick in it, and they're like, oh, it's a trumpet with a stick, that makes a good sword, doesn't it? Oh, it's very good at that. Like, they're kind of impressed by each other's inventiveness. So I think everyone has little moments, but the Asian kid made me laugh just because he was being such a dick to his brother, and that's kind of how he was being treated as well.
Mm.
I think there were lots of good characters, and like you say, Anthony, that kid's sister was very funny. So. Yeah, but you know, other than getting to the point where the big battle happens, the dog dies, and then we have a bit of, you know, music to try and make us feel extra things, a bit synthy. But you know, essentially the kids, you know, get ready for school again and think back on the Christmas holiday battle they've had, and you know, it kind of just ends, leaving you think about dog death and childhood memories. So there's not much else to talk about other than they had the battle, the fort collapsed. Call it a draw?
No one won.
Which is the true message of the film, which is what happens in all war. There are no winners in war. Only victims, yeah? Hand out the awards, guys. They fucking nailed it. No, but it is a really good film. Like, I was surprised.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't, because we didn't know anything about it, to get gifted something that's well acted, well told, kind of original and interesting. And the fact that, you know, it doesn't get brought up a lot, like, it, you know, it's not an 80s classic, but it, you know, it's a really good film, and I guess maybe it's just something for, you know, French-speaking Canadians to know about. But I'm happy that we watched it anyway.
Oh, yeah, same. Yeah, I was surprised just how just into it I got all the way through. With the amount of kids, like, you'd think there'd be some weak links somewhere, but they really weren't. You really totally bought it. Mainly because, you're right, I can't help but think it's just these kids just hung out for a couple of months and they all just became friends, and that just came through, like, on film.
Yeah, and it was very Beano. Like, it was eggings and painted snowballs and childhood japery that's quite fun with a mild edge to it, but still, you know, innocent enough. No teen pregnancies or slit throats or anything.
Yeah.
Well, not yet.
This time, maybe the sequel. They're a bit older and the war gets a bit more real.
Yeah, and it just constantly keeps the right tone. It's never...
Until the end, it doesn't.
Well, yeah, but okay, until the end. But it's never too silly that it doesn't make sense. But then it's never too on the nose, political.
Yeah.
That it takes you out of it.
Yeah, it's not Animal Farm, or it's not saying anything. I don't think it's if it is saying something about a specific regime or war. I didn't get it. I felt like it was a broad hint at how a snowball fight can be allegorical of real conflicts and the attitudes going into them and how it affects people. But it didn't patronise you or make you feel like a twat or whatever about it. It just entertained you in a fun, child-based way. So yeah,
and was clever.
Yeah, it's certainly imaginative. Abby, any last thoughts or a metaphor that you want to set us up with?
I think I'm going to struggle with the metaphor this, because it's already a metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just metaphor this metaphor in this metaphor.
Yeah, because I guess all we need to say is you liked it, but you had a dog death, so what's a metaphor for liking something that all spoils it by going a bit too far? Like, that's kind of, you know, I mean, we don't need a metaphor if I'm going to outright say it. It's just for the tradition of the podcast, really, that we think of a metaphor. But just whatever your thoughts are.
Hang on a second. Let me just look something up real quick.
Korean War. Did it end in a snowball fight? It did. It did end. Communism still to this day because of a snowball fight. God. I was a bit disappointed there was no snowmen in this.
I suppose.
They punched the fuck out of a snow fort. And that's pretty cool. But I would have liked a snowman to get kicked in the carrot or something. There's also a weird bit where the kids are trying to hide between branches of leaves like they're in a 1950s comic book strip.
Oh, yeah.
That didn't really come to much, but they did try it, and it was pretty stupid. There's a few hockey references. That's always good for Canadians. There's a few things that made it felt extra Canadian, especially the odd A and the odd terminology, I guess.
I there were a few moments where it felt very much of its time, because, like, why are you letting your kids go out skiing in the middle of the night? Like, anything could happen.
They could start a romance or a snowball fight. Or get eaten by wolves or foxes or something.
Or, like, go out wandering in the woods at night and stuff. And, like, that's fine. It's okay. You it's can fine. Do this.
They got a torch. It's not like they'll get knocked over by a car. Oh, that might happen.
Oh, like the fox trap. When the fox trap came up, it's like, oh, actually, that's quite serious.
Yeah, that could have been lethal, couldn't it? Well, it could have been ankle-breaking. Abby, have you found out what you wanted to find out?
No, I'm trying to think of something else where there's a product, I think, that I think there's a vibrator that's called something that sounds really wholesome and nice, and if there's a certain person who says, oh, I heard about this thing, what is it? And you're like, I don't want to tell you, and you don't want that.
Yeah.
Nope. And that's kind of what this is like, just because the dog dies, where someone's like, oh, this would be nice, I'll watch it with my kids, they'll be so happy. No. Yeah. No. No. Don't do that.
But you can still get a lot of enjoyment out of it.
You can, but you just have to be prepared in the right direction.
Yeah, it's
oh,
almost...
wow, I was not expecting that way.
Oh dear. I'm gonna try for one. I guess it's like a awesome summer holiday where you have a great time, it's all loads of fun, and then you come back in and you realise you've got the worst sunburn you've ever had, and you're just all of that fun, and then to end the holiday you've just got, like, the last day of it is just spoilt because you're in constant pain and suffering, and it's just like, oh, but it's still a good holiday. Yeah, but I regret it still. And that dog death is just that horrible sunburn. It's just, oh, come on now. And even that isn't enough, because they kill the dog when they could have just injured the dog. Just injure the dog, damn it. Just go too far. Like, the dog needs a moment at the end to be happy and to I don't know, maybe the dog can eat the baby and live happily ever after because it's took care of its rival. I don't know. Something more positive like that could happen. Yes, I don't know. It's like a great time with one bad moment that kind of spoils things, but not entirely.
I don't think I could do better than that, Rich. That was really good.
Frostbite from throwing snowballs. You may have had a really good snow fight, but you've got a black toe and it's going to be falling off.
Yeah. That sums up my feelings towards the film kind of perfectly too.
Just piggybacking, that's fine. So, you know, the war has stopped, the podcast has come to an end. Conveniently, though, the dog that could have put an end to it has not been barking. I refer to the dog near our house, which often scuppers the podcast by getting annoyed and howling. But yes, the podcast...
Or my own dog.
Yeah, or rain, or trains.
Likes to come in and just moan sometimes.
Yeah, if ever you've heard a weird noise, it isn't one of us evacuating our bowels, it's Anthony's strange dog just existing. But yeah, that's the war is stopped, the podcast is pretty much concluded. Till next summer holidays where we could do another basically Christmas film. But anyway, join us next time for another film, another theme, another chat, another load of spoilers. Bye-bye!
Au revoir.
Was that an au revoir or a goodbye there, hubby?
I don't know what I actually said. Au revoir.